Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz, your place for all things smooth. Artists,
it is my honor and pleasure to welcome to the show a very special guest, Mr. Terry Steele, the writer of Here and Now. Terry, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce to you the best dressed man in smooth jazz, Nick Colleone.
Hello, Terry. How are you?
My guest is Lorenzo Owens. Lorenzo, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Mr. Downing.
Yes, Mr. Downing, my dad. Just call me Will.
Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Music.
Here and now.
And news. This is the Jazz Queen with your smooth Jazz News Minute. And now, your host, the Jazz Queen.
Hello, and welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. That is an older version of our opener, but I'm glad that one played because I love it when Nick talks. Nick has such a deep, sexy voice, and every time it's, hello, Terry, how are you? I love that. So, Mike, how are you doing?
Doing okay, Terry. Doing great today. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing very well. Well, I am really, really excited about today's show because we are talking to two of the industry's best managers. We are talking to Carol Ray, who is Nick Colleone's manager, and Russell Blake's manager, Monica Hart. They are here today to talk about their clients and the life of a music manager. Carol and Monica, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we have interviewed your respective artists before, and Mike and I were talking about, you know, we should talk to some of the managers of these artists and get their view and their stories. And Mike, we were talking before we went on air, I was telling Carol and manager, Carol and Monica that there aren't very many women managers in the industry.
Yeah.
And they both agreed with that. And so we thought this would be great to hear their side of the story, you know, what they do in managing an artist, how they met Nick and Russell, and so on. So, ladies, what I would like to do first is start with what you were doing before you got into managing. Carol, let's start with you.
Well, I've done quite a few things in my long and varied career. But immediately preceding managing Nick, I was a regional sales manager for Motorola Semiconductor.
Okay.
Yep, right. And that's the exact reaction I got at parties, and it was great. I never had to talk about my job because who cared about semiconductors? Like, yeah, and what do you do to the next person, you know?
Okay, and Monica, what about you?
I was a librarian.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. All right. So now how did you guys meet Nick and Russell? Monica, how did you meet Russell?
Actually, it was strange how I met Russell. I was working at a library in Atlanta, but on the side I was always involved in music. I'm a singer, and also I play the piano and flute. And I had a very close friend who was an A&R, and she's actually from San Diego, California. So she was out here, and she was scouting some new talent, and she was at a concert that Russell was performing. Picked up his CD, Quiet Strength, brought it back to Atlanta, and she gave it to me. She said, you got to listen to this. And all I could see was on the cover of the CD was a picture of Russell with his bass, and you could see the one eye. And I said, okay, I'll listen to this, but no big deal. So I started listening to it, and I really got into the music, especially the song Silent Power. So I talked to her. I said, this is hot. This music has got to get on the air. And she said, well, why don't you make it your project? Because she knew that eventually I wanted to get out of what I was doing and to get into music full time. So she said, make it your project. I said, okay. She said, I know his manager at the time. She said, I'm going to, you know, set it up, and you see what you can do with it. And I took it and I ran with it. Next thing I know, I had the CD playing on some stations in Atlanta, some internet stations overseas. He was actually overseas at the time, heard about it, and when he got back to the States, immediately set up a meeting with me. He was coming through Atlanta on his way to New York. We sat down, to make a long story short, asked me to become his manager. I said, sure. And he said, well, this is going to be on a trial basis. You know, this is a year trial. If it works out, fine. We're mm-hmm. going on year three. I guess I'm still on trial basis. But I'm still here.
Still hanging in there. Okay, and Carol, how did you meet Nick?
I met Nick through some mutual friends who were musicians. And I met him long before he was a solo artist. He was part of a very popular and successful jazz group in Chicago. They had the previous year to my meeting him, they had won the Bud Light Jazz Competition in Chicago. So they were working all the time, but he was one of three principals in a jazz band, and then they hired in the bass and the drums. And I happened to be at a place he was performing, and I knew both the bass player and the drummer, so that's how I met Nick.
Wow.
So it was way before his solo career.
Okay.
Well, and not way, maybe a year before his solo career.
Okay. And then how did you come to manage him?
Well, he, as part of this very successful group, they worked all the time, and he was, you know, doing well financially and working a lot. But as we got to be friends and know each other better, he would, you know, he would often remark that he wished he had more time to write. He had been a very prolific writer when he was a young teenager. He'd been recorded by Johnny Mathis and Paul Anka when he was like 14. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to get back to writing, but honestly, he was so busy performing, working all the time, that he really didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to talk about that. And so maybe a year into knowing him, the singer in the band came down with throat problems and was told she couldn't sing for 2 months. Well, that kind of took care of that, and all of a sudden he had free time. So I suggested to him, why don't you just go ahead and write? You know, you're always talking about it. And he started writing, and he wrote some really wonderful tunes that wound up being on his first CD that we wound up producing together. And long story short, he said to me, would you manage me? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I've certainly never managed an artist in my life, but I'll think about it. Mm-hmm. My background was sales and marketing. And so I thought about it like any good salesperson. Do I have a product? Can I sell it? And I thought, well, there's certainly a product here, and I can sell paper clips to, you know, anybody. So I guess I can sell an artist too. And that's kind of how we got started.
Wow. Now, Colonel, I read an interview that you did in the past that you actually gave yourself a 2-year cushion of funds and everything to go out and just try to do it, and then you said if it didn't pan out the way you thought, then you would just go back to working.
Well, in the beginning, Mike, it was definitely a side venture for me. I was working for Motorola. I was a regional sales manager. I was making, you know, very good money, and this was kind of just like a side thing for me. Well, you know, this will be fun. I'll try this. This is,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting to make any money, which is a good thing, because when you first start out a solo artist, no matter how successful they were in a group, it's like they never existed. It's like, it's, you know, so developing a solo career from the ground up is a difficult venture. It's difficult for a manager, and especially somebody who's doing it, you know, roots up. I didn't really know. And for the artist in particular, because you have to turn down a lot of things if you want to be a solo artist. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't be a sideman and a frontman. It just doesn't work.
Right.
And there's many examples of people who try to keep one foot in each box, and it just doesn't, the solo thing never develops if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's So we did that for several years, actually probably 5 or 6 years. And then I began to really, I mean, we were making some serious headway, and he was, you know, just showing more and more what the potential was for him on the national scene. And eventually it just came to a decision point for me. I could continue to live in the corporate world, and or I could make a change. And I thought, you know, for me, it was not that difficult a decision, because I was becoming less and less enchanted with corporate America, and I thought, you know, this guy's really got something. He's the real deal. And if I put as much effort into his career and our business, we are now business partners, as I do into Motorola, where would he be? What could happen with his career? And so I did make basically a 2-year plan, which was saved up a bunch of money, and said, you know, I'm gonna save enough money to fund myself, pay for my you know, my mortgage, my utilities, my food, whatever, pay my bills for 2 years out of what I've got saved up. If at the end of those 2 years this isn't working, well, then I'll just go back to corporate America, because I knew I could do that. And that was about 6 or 7 years ago, and I haven't seen corporate America since, so I guess it worked.
Yeah, definitely. And Monica, what about you? You know, you said that, you know, you're a librarian. Did you give yourself a time limit, or, you know, I know you said that Russell gave you a limited contract, but after when did you realize that this is what I'm supposed to do?
Really after 6 months of trying to do both, and I was listening to Carol, and I can agree. It's hard to be in the corporate world and trying to manage an artist at the same time. And when that 6-month limit came, I said, I can't do this, and I need to devote my time to my artist. And that's what I did, and it's going full speed ahead. You just can't be in both worlds at the same time, because your artist needs your attention full time. Mm-hmm. And you can't divide your time between 9 to 5 on the clock and listening to a boss, and your artist essentially is your boss also. So you just couldn't have two bosses. I need one. And that's when I said, that's it. It's full speed ahead with Russell. And it's been a wonderful partnership, because we are also business partnerships. We have a partnership together too.
Okay. Well, let me give out the phone number in case anyone wants to call in and talk to Carol or Monica. The number is 646-716-5485. And I want to welcome Ms. Ava Lemert, Cheryl B., and Dave Walker, 49, and all of the guests to the chat room. And I have a question for you ladies from the chat room. Cheryl wants to know if there were any problems that occurred early on that made you want to do an about face, and if so, what made them stay?
The answer for me is no. There was never anything that made me. I'm not an easily discouraged person. I learned in sales. I was very successful in sales, and if there's one thing that I learned, is that the word no, if you hear no from somebody, you just have not asked the question the right way, or you haven't posed it correctly. And when I feel a no coming on, I just back off and recircle the wagons and start over again. I never felt anything was so insurmountable that I wanted to back off of it. I felt it was all a challenge that I could meet and I would meet. And I just saw so much potential that there was never a downside that I could see.
Okay. And for me, the answer is also no, because my life was music. Because as a child, I was immersed in music, from all genres of music. So this was just a right fit for me. Plus, I believe in Russell Blake. I love his music, and I know his potential. Well, and that was it. I knew there's just nothing that was going to stop me.
Now, let me ask you guys about when I first requested the interview with you, you both said to me that you are unorthodox managers in the way that you manage. So explain that. How different are you from other managers? Carol?
Well, I think the reason that I'm different is because nobody ever helped me. So I never learned the quote, right way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Not having known that we couldn't accomplish what we did, we went ahead and did it. And I think that's the biggest difference. I don't have any preconceived notions because I wasn't trained by another manager. I didn't work in an office, in an entertainment business office to see how it was done. We basically invented this, Nick and me, together. We invented what I would do and how we would approach it. And so I don't have any rules that I play by that vaguely resemble a lot of what I see out there from other managers. And that's not that they're wrong. It's just that's not the way I do it.
Right. Okay. And Monica?
For me, combining my experiences in music as well as Russell's 3 decades in the industry, we think out of the box. We don't walk that fine line that, you know, this is what an artist should do, this is what a manager should do. We think out of the box. We invent, and you know, new ways to get, you know, the word out, and we just go for it. You know, but we have a very good meeting of the minds. We have the philosophy that we will agree to disagree. We are open. We'll shoot ideas. We'll bounce off ideas off each other, and we just go for it. But we just don't walk a fine line. You know, this is all new territory. I mean, this industry is changing daily, so you have to keep up with it. And that's the best good thing about us is that we just don't think one way. We just move and shake. And our moving and shaking has been successful.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about doing it without guidance, it's like I'm a self-taught manager. To me, that meant that I addressed the issues that came up that I saw, not experiences that somebody else had. I didn't listen to anything anyone else said because nobody was talking to me. So everything that we looked at and everything that we faced, we found our own solutions and our own approaches. And I think that's the reason that we have been as successful as we have in developing Nick's career is because there have been no rules for us to follow. There's no guidance, and we've addressed things as we've seen them. We have a very strong grassroots approach to Nick's fan base and to the music in general. I consider my job, a big part of my job, is to keep the garbage away from him and to let him create and let him be the artist. And I handle the business end of things. It's not that I don't keep him informed, but I don't bother him with the minutia of it. He needs to be free to create. He needs to be able to trust somebody, and he can trust me. He knows that from 15 years we've been working together now.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows that any decision I make will have his best interests at heart. And if it's questionable or I feel I need to bounce it off him, I do. He has a very good business head. He's a very sensible person with a tremendous amount of common sense and really great people. You know, he's like got radar for people. He can see them for who and what they are, and that helps a lot too. And I'm from New York, so I don't – it's kind of hard to – pull the wool over my eyes too. So between the two of us, I think we have good intuition about people, and we know that the success of any artist is based in the fans and in the music. If you don't keep the integrity of your music and respect the fans and respect the people who love music, and if you don't make your music for yourself, Nick has never made a record. We've never produced a CD or a tune that was made for radio. Our last record deal was with Koch, now E1, and Chuck Mitchell, who was the adult division VP, said to Nick, and it's the reason we signed with them, You make the record you want. We'll figure out what to do with it.
Oh.
You know, because there's no, and if he hadn't said something like that, we wouldn't be with them. Because, you know, to have someone sit there and say, well, now, you know, you have to make three radio-friendly tunes, and then you have to do this and you have to do that. No, you can't box artists in like that. You need to let their creativity just be what it is, and you need to let them develop. Every CD that Nick makes is different. I'm sure Russell's is, you know, different every time too, because they grow as artists, and you can't give them rules, and you can't put boundaries around them.
Right, I totally agree. I totally agree with Carol, and you know, trust is the bottom line with a manager and an artist. And I'm the same way with Russell. I keep all the junk away from him. I give him that time to create, to do what he needs to do, because there's so much junk that's being thrown sometimes at an artist. They don't need to be bothered with all of that. You know, it's my job, and that's the way I handle it. It's my job. I'm the front person in front. Throw it at me. If I feel it needs to be discussed with Russell, I will bring it to him. We normally have meeting every week, and we go over the week's agenda, what's coming up during the pipeline, what's going on with his recordings, what interviews are coming up, what tours are coming up. We go over it all. If there's anything in between that we need to talk about, you know, it's just easy for us to either pick up the phone or shoot an email. But, you know, that trust factor is what keeps us strong as artist and manager. Plus, I give him that time to create and not have to worry about anything. You know, and he's confident that I'm going to handle this, and I'm going to handle it right. And if there's anything that needs to be brought to him, I'm going to bring it to him.
Now, I love what both of you ladies said. Now, one thing that I have noticed that you both said was two words, was trust and being different. Now, when these artists were, let's say, local artists, how did you go into your planning and your marketing to say, hey, this is what we got to do to be different, and in order to get them out there more than just being just local artists? How did you guys implement those things, and were, like, did they trust you guys enough to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do to differentiate myself from the masses to get myself on a national level?
I'll start with that one, because I started with Nick before he even had a CD. Monica picked up Russell later on. You know, Russell was already out there doing his own thing, at least at some level. Pardon me, I have allergies, so you're going to have to bear with that every once in a while. But when I first started working with Nick, and he made the decision while we were in discussion as to whether or not he was going to even attempt a solo career, and he said, you know, yes, I want to go for it. So we literally started from the ground up, and the first thing that I knew, and it's not because anybody told me, I just knew, watching the Chicago scene, which is where Nick came from, and he still lives in Chicago, so do I, and there are artists who 15 years later are still doing the same clubs and the same types of events that they were doing when we first started, you know, developing his solo career. I realized very early on that he had to be differentiated, and so the way I did that was exclusivity. And it had to be the word got out that if you wanted to see Nick, you couldn't see him Monday here and Tuesday there and Wednesday there and Friday here and at the car wash and, you know, every other place. That if you wanted to see Nick, there were specific places that he would perform, specific times that he would perform, and you had to make an effort to get out there. He was in two places that we worked. He was the only artist that they could charge cover charge for, because he had a very specific audience that came out to see him whenever he performed there. Everybody else who played there played, you know, they didn't get anything at the door. It was like walk in and sit down. With Nick, they knew that, you know, and it didn't take long to develop that, because, and it was hard on Nick, I have to say. It was hard on him financially because, you know, everybody else was working all week and he wasn't. But I said to him, if we do this, pretty soon I can start asking for more, because you're a proven commodity. You're selling, you know, people are paying cover charge. It's the same on the national level. You have to work up to the point where you can prove that you can sell hard tickets. And but that's how we got him going. He soon became one of the top acts in Chicago because people were willing to pay him to perform much more than the other artists in town because he pulled people in the door and they could charge cover and they knew it. And from that, we expanded regionally and then, you know, eventually nationally. So now I'll turn it over to you, Monica.
Well, for Russell, we decided to build upon his over three decades of experiences because Russell has been a basis for so many people, from Sonny Rollins to Pharoah Sanders to Chaka Khan to Sybil Shepherd, Wynton Marsalis, I mean, Brenda Russell. So we built on that fan base. And we started from there, you know, saying, okay, here it is. Russell is out here now. He's soloist now. And we built from there, and we just branched out. And, you know, from there, it was not playing in the same clubs over and over and over again, not saturating yourself, knowing that, you know, I can see Russell here, and next week I'm going to see him down the street. I'm going to see him there. We did not want to do that at all. It was, if you want to see Russell Blake, you're going to see him here. You're going to wait a couple, maybe 2 weeks, you'll see him here. But you're not going to see him every single week in this, as I want to call it, the Chitlin' Circuit. It was not going to have that, and we didn't do that. And his fan base grew. We started having more, you know, radio, more press, and it just took off. It just took off from there.
Okay. I have a couple of questions for you from the chat room. Daywalker 49 for both of you wants to know, when was the first, when they first started managing their artists, what gave them the competence to be able to interface with people in an industry that was not in their area of expertise and experience, and were you being tested by the insiders?
I'm just a bold person, period. I mean, period. I'm determined. I'm supportive of my artist, and he's not going to stop me. So I need to do what I need to do for my artist. You cannot be timid in this industry at all. You can't be shy. You can't be, I'm afraid to talk. Sometimes you're going to be known as another word sometime in this industry, but I let that roll off my back and I keep going because the bottom line is it's about my artist and it's about respect for my artist and also respect for me as a manager. I'm not, you know, a fan as some people out here in the world want to look at female managers. No, we're not fans or we're not girlfriends of the artist. No, I am the artist manager, and you're going to respect me as the manager, plus you're going to respect my artist. So it's my boldness that gets me out there, and it gets me out there to doors open for Russell Blake.
Okay, Carol?
I'm not an easily intimidated person, and without being boastful, there's never been anything that I tried to do that I couldn't do. I have confidence in myself, and I had a very strong sales and marketing background in a good old boys network. I mean, if you want to talk about a male-dominated industry, try semiconductors. They invent them, they design them, it's a totally male-dominated business, and I had to hold my own, and I really didn't have any problems with that. I think that if you present yourself as a serious person, an intelligent person, that you're willing to listen, you're willing to talk, but at the end of the day, you know, you don't cave in, you don't giggle, you just go ahead and do what you have to do. I've never had a problem with tackling anything that was new. I consider new a lot more fun than, it's like the way I like to put it is I don't do windows. I like challenges. I like to look at things and say, okay, what can I do with this? Where can I take this? I have many interests outside of music, and I try to pursue them with as much vim and vigor as I do the music business. And although there's not that much time for it now because this is a very time-consuming thing, managing an artist. It's extremely time-consuming. I don't think people realize how many hours a week are devoted to this kind of thing. If you manage the way Monica and I do, you can be a 9-to-5 manager, you know, with a secretary in an office, and or you can be a the only place I do Windows is, you know, if I have to do Windows for Nick, I'll do Windows for Nick.
Okay.
You know, if it's in my house, somebody comes in and does the Windows, you know. But I've never had a lack of confidence, and it never occurred to me that I couldn't do this. I figured if I can sell semiconductors, I can sell anything.
You can sell anything, yeah. I have another question. Cheryl B. is making a comment, Monica, on what you said about how Kate having two bosses, corporate America and the artist. What suggestion would you give someone who wants to pursue managing but can't necessarily afford leaving their current position right away?
Time management is the key. You're going to have to know how to manage your time, and you're going to have to realize you're going to put in a lot of hours once you leave that 9-to-5. You're going to put in hours at home in front of the computer, on your lunch break, returning phone calls, in between, in your cubicle, returning phone calls. If you have access to the internet on your job, sending out emails, you're just going to have to juggle both at the same time.
I'd like to address that, too, because I spent a good seven years doing that, managing Nick and having a probably 60-hour-a-week corporate job. And you need to respect the integrity of both entities that you're serving. When you're on your corporate job, you have to, they're paying you good money to do something for them, and you have to give it to them. So really the secondary thing has to be, you have to fit the artist and your management job around that. Ultimately, that's why I wound up leaving corporate America, because I no longer wanted to fit my music business around the corporate world that was paying me a lot of money, and I owed them 100% for that. And I also wanted to give Nick 100%, and the decision had to be made. So you have to maintain, the integrity is key. You have to have integrity in everything that you do. If you're working for someone, whether you're working for your artist or you're working for another company, you have to maintain the integrity of that relationship in both relationships. And if you are successful in developing your artist to the point where you can afford to leave, and realize there are sacrifices involved. I don't make the money now that I made at Motorola. I have a lot more satisfaction. I like being my own boss. I like the life that I live, but I am not as financially as successful as I was at Motorola. But I am so free compared to working for corporate America that it's a good trade-off for me.
It's a very good trade-off, and believe me, I spent a lot of my lunch hours returning phone calls, you know, running errands at lunchtime. You just have to have excellent time management. And then when I got home, I'm putting in longer hours. Sometimes I will be up to 1, 2 o'clock in the morning to turn around, and I'm getting ready to hit, you know, punch in at 7 o'clock at my regular job. But it's all for the love of what you're doing. And I'm passionate about what I do. I love what I'm doing, and I would not trade it for corporate America for nothing in the world.
Now, do either of you keep in contact with your former coworkers or employers, or have you seen them since leaving, and what do they think of you now?
Mine think it's cool. I made a lot of friends throughout my many years of working, you know, in the real world. And they were, I still have quite a few contacts and a lot of really good friends, and they think it's cool. You know, they were there in the beginning. They watched this thing develop, you know, with Nick and me, and they watched his career. In a way, a lot of them feel invested in it because they were supportive. You know, they loved Nick's music. They love Nick. And so I have not really had any issues. And the people who fall by the wayside, there's many more of them than the ones that you maintain close relationships with, but one of my former customers still works for Motorola, and has become very much involved in breast cancer. She started a 501c. She's just getting her paperwork now. But she's very involved in breast cancer research and raising money. And we just did a national campaign with Wine and Jazz magazine and on behalf of her foundation. And that would have never happened if we had lost our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been 6 or 7 years since I worked for Motorola, but she's still a good friend. And her daughter, I interned with me for 2 summers. And so, you know, for me, it has not been a problem. The people who are interested in what I do maintain friendships. And I have people that I'm friends with from Motorola that I haven't seen since I left, but we're in constant email contact. And mm-hmm. so it hasn't, you know, I don't see it as an issue, frankly. How about you, Monica?
You know, for me, my friends are very happy because while I was in college, I was a radio programmer. So I was programming the college station. So everyone knew that this is where I should be. They were surprised that I wasn't there. I was working as a librarian. But I still kept my hand in music at all times. So I have friends who I grew up with, who I went to college with, who are just excited. A lot of my friends were surprised when I moved from Atlanta to L.A. Because at that time, Russell was based out here in L.A. I was in Atlanta. So, you know, we're doing a lot of emailing and calling. And I just felt, you know, for me to devote what I really need to do for my artists, I need to pack up and move west. And that's what I did.
Mm.
And people were just like, you're leaving Atlanta? Oh, my God, you're going out there where you don't know anybody? And I said, yeah, I got to do what I got to do because this is my job. This is my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually, Russell has a show January 15th in Atlanta, and I'm going back. And so now my friends are actually going to see me since I've left Atlanta and I'm coming back, you know, with my artist who's before me. So mm-hmm. it's you know, it's going to be nice to see people, but, you know, in the end, it's, you know, your friends understand. If they're supportive of what you're doing, they're going to be supportive regardless.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, I want to ask both of you, like I said, Carl, you in Chicago. Monica, like I said, you're out in L.A. now. Now, being from, let's say, Atlanta and Chicago and not really knowing nobody in the industry, how did you make it your business to try to, like I said, go out and meet the big heads or the big wigs in the industry to kind of get your artists out there? What was your plan to really, like I said, travel west or travel to another city to meet a radio station programmer or somebody like that? What was your plan and networking?
And to piggyback on that question, what was their reaction to you as a female manager, the first time you're meeting someone to promote the artist, what was their reaction to you as a female manager?
I know for me, I had friends in the industry in Atlanta. So I got advice from them on, you know, who I should contact, how I should go about doing it. The reaction for me when I've met industry executives has been, you know, very professional because I carry myself very professionally. I go in and I keep the focus of the conversation on the artist. I don't divert. And I know we had a conversation before we went on air. You know, I remember I had a meeting and I kept being called sweetie. You know,
mm-hmm.
no, you're not going to call me sweetie. You're not going to call me darling. You know, I am here for a reason. And once you start, you know, showing that, you know your stuff and you know what you're doing and this is why I'm here, you know, the whole vibe changes. And they realize, okay, she knows her stuff and let's talk business. So when I moved out to L.A., I just picked up on what all my experiences in Atlanta, and I just kept it going. You know, out here, this was new territory for me because I'm not from L.A. So I came out here. I did my research. That's one thing, you know, my research background skills are strong as being a librarian and someone working in the competitive intelligence field. I know how to, you know, dig up hidden facts and hidden information. I just started doing my research, picked up the ball, and kept it going. So it, really nothing has changed.
Well, I had no contacts whatsoever in the music business, none, zero, zip. So everything that everyone that I ultimately developed relationships with or got to know was first-time contacts. And for me, the easiest way to go about doing that was, again, I have to go back to sales. I had a product to sell. It happened to be Nick Colione, who was a person and an artist, but it was, you know, it's a product within the music business.
Right.
And make no mistake about that. So I had developed over the course of, one thing I will say for Motorola is that they were insistent on sales training. We had to have 2 weeks of training a year, and I went through every sales course there was. Some were good, some were bad, but I picked something up out of most of them. And so my ability to ferret out how to get a hold of people and who you should get a hold of were based in my previous sales experience, which was very extensive, and my intuition and listening. I have very good listening skills, and I listened to everybody. I listened to casual conversation. I listened to people pontificate. I listened to everything and picked up a lot from that. You know, you very quickly learn how to filter. And that combined with a serious addiction to the Internet meant that I could find out just about anything I needed to and then develop strategies for how I was going to approach this issue or that person or whatever. And a lot of it has to do with really Nick. When people see Nick perform, my mantra is I just have to get them to see Nick once. Because you can talk about Nick, I could send out press. I stopped sending out packages a long time ago because a CD does not represent Nicolion Live, and Nicolion Live is what we're selling. And you know, there's just a CD is a CD, and it's music, but Nick Live is a whole other thing. And so I didn't even bother. I said, you know what, you come see him live, or I'll send you a video clip, but I'm not sending you a CD because that's not who Nick is. Mm-hmm. That's who Nick is on. That's what you hear on the radio, because they won't broadcast live performances on radio, but Nick is a full artist. He's an entertainer, and he needs to be seen to be experienced. And once I could sell him to someone, then the word of mouth was as big within the industry as anything else was. Promoters talk to each other. And
right.
Once you start, once you have an artist that they are impressed with, that more importantly, their audience is impressed with, and key, in my opinion, is being easy to do business with. I can be as hard-headed as the next person, but within business, I am as reasonable and rational as you can get, because I don't believe in making enemies. I don't believe in getting into arguments or fights. A pissing contest is not anything that anyone ever wins. And from my perspective, the more professionally I approach things and the more people talk about Nick, the better off we are.
Mm, definitely.
The word on us is we're easy to do business with. We're not easy to, we don't roll over. We're not easy to do business with in the sense that you can have your way with us, because you can't, but we're easy to do business with. I don't, you know, there are no tantrums backstage with Nicolione or his band or me. If something isn't going well, it's not going well. We find a solution. We don't stomp our feet and scream and pull the artist, you know, thing. Which we have seen many people do, and that in the long run doesn't do anybody any good. One of the things that I feel is very important, and I make it my business when we walk into a venue, is the first thing I do is I seek out the production manager, the stage manager, the guy who's handling, you know, front of house, the monitor guy, introduce myself to the crew, make sure that I know their names and they know mine. Because they're the ones that make things happen. And when the promoter realizes that you can have Nicolione come in and you're going to have not only a great show, but people who at the end of the day, when they walk out the door, everybody on the stage goes, wow, they were nice to have. They were a pleasure to have. You know, those are the kinds of things that you build your business faster that way than any other way. You can send out all the press kits you want. It's the experience that people have with you when you start working with them that gets that word spread faster than wildfire.
And plus, it's your reputation in this industry. If you have that reputation of being a terror, as being a diva, as being a divo, no one wants to work with you.
Mm-hmm. And they will if you can sell tickets. They'll put up with it as long as you can sell tickets. But if the minute you can't sell tickets, they are happy to see you go.
Mm. And you know, and that's one thing, you know, Russell Blake and I pride ourselves on is our reputation. Because we are the same. We are easy to work with, but you're not going to walk over us.
Mm-hmm.
Another, and especially with me as being an avid reader, I still keep up. I keep paper subscriptions. I'm just old school like that. So I still have Billboard and Base Magazine. So I'm just keeping up with everything that's going on in this industry. With me, it's just reading and internet and, you know, talking with Russell, because Russell has so much experiences from his performing. So, you know, it's just a lot of keeping up with what's going on. And I just pride myself on that. And I pride myself on the fact that I'm not a hard person. I'm not a hard person at all. I'm very relaxed. I'm very calm. And I think that's a part that you need to have in this industry also, because you have to have a thick skin, but you also have to have a calmness about you and to be able to think quickly on your feet, because situations change so quickly in this industry, and especially when you're in the middle of a negotiation or you're talking to someone on the phone. You might have worked out a deal one way, and then the next time, you know, you get a phone call, it's totally different. So you just have to learn how to roll with the punches when it comes down to working in this industry.
Wow.
Now,
and you have to have a good lawyer, and you have to have a good accountant.
Amen.
Yes.
I have another question for you from the chat room, but I want to welcome Rumor Radio, the Cool Radio Man, and Tyler Irving. Hello and welcome to the show. The question is for both of you. What is your day-to-day activities like? Kind of give us a snapshot of what you do in a day for you know, as a manager.
Well, if our booking agent hasn't called me by 9 o'clock, then the sun's not coming up that day. So my day starts with a phone call from our booking agent, recapping where we're at, what's going on, the latest this and that. I start my day with Steve Butler and a cup of coffee. Mm. And it's a lot of phone, it's a lot of email, and it's a lot of internet. There's a lot of discussion that goes on. Our booking agent is as involved in and as knowledgeable about where we want to go. He understands our objectives, Nick's career goals. He's on board with it. He's a part of it. And I talk to him many times during the day. I have an excellent merchandising and marketing managers in Christine and Tom Clark, and they are a big part of what I do. They're a big part of assisting me. Christine helps me with a lot of the press releases and a lot of the written stuff. She's an excellent writer, and I can offload to her and know that it's going to be done and it's going to be done right. I think when you're running, essentially, Monica and I run small businesses. Mm-hmm. And when you run a small business, you can't afford to hire a lot of help, so you have to have the best help that you can get. And when you can mm-hmm. find somebody who is as passionate about your artist and what they're doing, that they enjoy what they're doing, then you know you've got the right person if they've got the right skill set. So we've been fortunate to find people who fit into our master plan and are pretty seamless about it too. They share the passion that we have, and they want to see Nick succeed as much as we do. So that's a really helpful thing too. And I don't know. I think for me, the probably the best thing that ever happened to me in life was when BlackBerries came out and I could start getting my email on the road, because I travel with Nick. There was a question earlier about, you know, how do you get to know people? And a big part of it for me was I went on every gig. I served as road manager for years for Nick on everything that he did, and so I can talk to the technical people, I can talk to the producers, I can talk to anybody, because I was there. But the hardest part for me was being away from that email. And now that BlackBerries are there, oh, God bless them.
Everywhere.
That is the BlackBerry is your lifesaver. My day starts, of course, you know, I get up. I have to meditate first before I get going with my day. And then it's a daily phone call to Mr. Blake to touch bases with him, see how he's doing, you know, because sometimes he'll get phone calls that I won't get. We'll converse, and then it's talking to the people who are in our camp. We have been very blessed to have so many supportive people who are around us, who support Russell, who support, you know, his music. And you know, for me, it's on the phone, it's the internet, it's doing everything. I'm still the road manager, and even though I think Russell would love for me to give up that job, I love that job. So right now we're working on, he has a concert coming up in Atlanta, so that's been my focus, has been getting ready for the show in Atlanta, talking to, you know, the promoter, talking to the venue, making sure, you know, that, you know, merchandise is going to be where it needs to be. So that's my focus. But every day my day is different. But the majority of my time is spent on the phone, on the internet, and answering emails.
Wow.
Now,
you wear many hats.
Yes.
Yeah. You have to. And, you know, we run one-man shows here. We don't have staff.
Right.
We don't have secretaries. There's nobody to say, oh, go do that. If somebody has to go do it, it's me. I have to talk to myself, you know. So there's not a lot of offloading that can be done. You know, everybody has a life. There are people who are willing to help. My merch manager is not full-time. You know, my marketing manager is not full-time. They certainly put a lot into it and give as many hours as is needed to get done whatever. They pick up to do, but at the end of the day, it's me 24/7.
And it falls on us.
Yeah. So, you know, if I delegate something, I'm very lucky in that we now travel with a sound engineer, which takes a big burden off of me. I don't have to go and, you know, talk to them and explain to them how, you know, Nick has to float on top of the band, and, you know, this is not a group. Nick is a solo artist. You know, the band has to be underneath him. I don't have to go to the back of the room, you know, when the first song starts, and go over and talk to the sound engineer and have him change the mix. You know, I don't have to do that now. We have a sound engineer, which is lovely. And I have someone who helps me with road management, a very talented lady named Dolores. And so she can spell me when it's going to be some really horrendous trip, or she just wants to, you know, it's time, she wants to get back on the road again. I have a very dependable and reliable person that will help with road management. So I don't have to do that anymore. And we also have people around the country who are very talented and we've gotten to know over the years, and we'll take that responsibility off. And so, you know, we've grown, we've been able to develop, you know, little pockets of staff here and there, or people that we can hire to bring in and help out. There's some very talented people on the West Coast and on the East Coast, and pretty much in the Central Region. Either Dolores and I will, or I will handle it. She just went up to Toronto with Nick. You know, and I think it's really funny in a way that most of Nick's management team, with the exception of Tom Clark, is pretty much female. You know, it's myself, it's Christine who handles a lot of the marketing, it's Dolores who handles a lot of the road management, or a good portion of it. It's pretty interesting that Nick is surrounded by women and nobody seems to bat an eye. Occasionally there is the, as Monica alluded to earlier, is that his girlfriend? Or, You know,
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, but it comes from fans, not within the industry, but fans will say, "Oh, are you Nick's wife?" And I think I think it's mostly because they're interested in Nick and they want to find out if I'm competition or something.
You know, and I get that question a lot too. But you know, it's amazing how that the correlation, because with Russell, you know, our team, we are surrounded by females. And I think that's just naturally because we are female managers. And we just happen to attract, you know, the best people. And they just happen to be females that's around us.
Yeah. Wow. I was going to jump in real fast, ladies. I just want to ask you, I know a lot of people are probably out there wondering, too, like I said, with the way that the industry is right now with the loss of so many smooth jazz stations and things like that, and I know you ladies mentioned the internet and Blackberries and things like that. How do you keep your artists visible with the way that the environment is shifting with the loss of the stations and things like that, and the implementation of the internet, Facebook, and things like that? How do you guys keep your artists visible, and how are you using technology to build a bigger fan base?
Well, it hasn't affected us at all, I can tell you, in the sense of us doing anything differently. We long ago recognized that internet radio was an up-and-coming and powerful force, and so I have 6 years worth, at least 6 years worth of developing contacts with internet radio, and I have program directors all over the world that I'm in regular correspondence with. When Nick does a new project, they get it. I have his CDs uploaded onto iDisc, and they get the passwords, and they can download his music. I don't have to spend $20 to send a CD to Australia. You know, the music is right there for him. Nick did two Christmas releases, and I just did a blast to all my internet people all over the world and sent his two tunes for you, and play them if you like them.
No, I'm the same way.
You know, and the same thing with the internet websites. There are some excellent internet websites that are devoted to music, and
right.
I know the publishers of those websites and a lot of the writers, and that's something I've been doing for years. It's something that the rest of the industry is just figuring out now, and I think it's unfortunate that they didn't see it coming, but I guess, again, you know, when you don't come up the traditional way, you look at things with different eyes, and I saw that a long time ago. And so I don't have to go develop that base. I have a couple hundred people who do internet broadcasting and shows, and Nick, as a matter of fact, is now doing his own internet radio show on smoothjazznow.com. He broadcasts 4 hours a night, Monday through Friday, courtesy John Bowden, who called and asked if he would be willing to do that. And so now he's got his own internet radio show.
All right. We have two minutes left. Let's quickly, Monica.
Monica, go ahead, Monica.
Oh, no, I was just going to, you know, say, you know, basically what Carol's doing is the same thing as what I'm doing. You know, nothing really different.
Okay. All right. Well, I have not seen Russell live yet. I have not seen him perform live yet, but I have seen Nick, and he's an awesome performer, as I'm sure Russell is too, and I can't wait to see him live. I want to thank both of you. Oh, my God, this has been such an informative show.
Terry, Nick's
going
to be back in your neck of the woods. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to let you know Nick's going to be back in your neck of the woods at Clark County Amphitheater.
Oh, okay. All right.
And Terry, if you want to see Russell live January 15th, Atlanta, for Martin Luther King birthday celebration, Russell Blake Live in Atlanta.
All right, then. All righty.
Let me ask you, ladies, real fast, too. But I don't mean to cut you off, Terry. Now, in addition to them two artists, are you ladies getting any inquiries and things like that from other artists that want you to manage them, too?
All the time.
All the time.
Okay. Good.
I was going to ask that question. I was wondering the same thing. Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us. It has been very informative, very interesting. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking.
You're very welcome.
Yes, and I will see you ladies on Facebook.
Yeah. All the time.
Happy holidays. Happy New
holidays.
Year. And Merry Christmas to both of you. And we will definitely
thank
be
you.
Seeing you in the new year.
Well, thanks for having
thank
both
you.
Of us. And thanks to all the listeners. We appreciate their support.
Yeah, we really do.
All right. All right. Thank you, ladies. Have a great day.
You
great
too.
And Monica Hart and Carol Ray. Oh, my God, what a great interview that was. Thank you again for coming on and telling us your stories. Check them out. Check the artist out, nickcoleon.com. Russell Blake is on MySpace. He's also on Facebook, so is Nick. Check them out. And purchase the music. Go buy the music. If you don't have their music, go get the music. Definitely. All right. Mike, anything else to add?
Nothing much, Terry, but just to say Merry Christmas to everybody and a Happy New Year. And like I said, 2010 is almost upon us, and like I said, we're going to do some big things in 2010. So all the fans, if you guys have, like I said last time, if you guys have artists that you want us to interview, like I said, you can hit us on Facebook, Mike Reynolds, or Talking Smooth Jazz. You know, send us the name of the artist that you want to interview and everything, and we'll try to get them on the show and get their music heard to the people out in the world. You know, that's it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, this is our last show for 2009. So we will see you in the new year on January 2nd with guitars and artists, Andrea Rizzotti. Have you seen his artwork, Mike? Did you go to his website?
Yes. Yes, I went to his website, and it's very, very nice.
Yes,
his music is very nice, too, yes.
Yeah, beautiful work. He does some beautiful work. All right, this is the Jazz Queen, and you have been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz on blogtalkradio.com with me, the Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And we look forward to talking smooth jazz with you in 2010. Happy New Year's, Merry Christmas, and thank you so much for tuning in.